Good day to everyone listening to this podcast. Today, I'm going to be talking about Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Meditations is perhaps the only document of its kind ever made. It is the private thoughts of the world's most powerful man giving advice to himself on how to make good on the responsibilities and obligations of his positions. Trained in Stoic philosophy, Marcus Aurelius stopped almost every night to practice a series of spiritual exercises, reminders designed to make him humble, patient, empathetic, generous, and strong in the face of whatever he was dealing with. It is eminently readable and perfectly accessible. You cannot read this book and not come away with a phrase or a line that will be helpful to you the next time you are in trouble. It is practical philosophy embodied. Book 1. Deaths and Lessons. My grandfather Varus. Character and self-control. My mother. Her reverence for the divine. Her generosity. Her inability not only to do not wrong, but even to conceive of doing it. And the simple way she lived, not in the least like the rich. 4. My great-grandfather. To avoid the public schools, to hire good private teachers, and to accept the resulting costs as money well spent. 5. My first teacher. Not to support this side or that in chariot racing, this fighter or that in the games, to put up with discomfort and not make demands, to do my own work, mind my own business, and have no time for slanderers. 6. Diognetus. Not to waste time on nonsense, not to be taken in by conjurers and hoodoo artists, and what they talk exhausts them and all the rest of it. Not to be obsessed with quail fighting or other crazes like that. To hear unwelcome truths. To practice philosophy and to study with Tandesis and Marcianus. To write dialogues as a student. To choose the Greek lifestyle. The camped and the cloak. Rusticus. The recognition that I needed to train and discipline my character. Not to be sidetracked by my interest in rhetoric, not to write treatises on abstract questions or deliver moralizing little sermons or compose imaginary descriptions of the simple life or the man who lives only for others, to steer clear of oratory, poetry, and belles lettres, not to dress up just a shawl around the house or things like that, to write straightforward letters, to behave in a way when people who have angered or annoyed us want to make up. To read attentively. Not to be satisfied with just getting the gist of it. And not to fall for every smooth talker. And for introducing me to Epictetus' lectures and loaning me his own copy. 8. Apollonius. Independence and unvarying reliability. And to pay attention to nothing, no matter how fleetingly, except the logos, and to be the same in all circumstances, intense pain, the loss of a child, chronic illness, and to see clearly from his example that a man can show both strength and flexibility, his patience in teaching, and to have seen someone who clearly viewed his expertise and ability as a teacher as the humblest of virtues, to have learned how to accept favors from friends without losing your self-respect or appearing ungrateful. Kindness, an example of fatherly authority in the home, what it means to live as nature requires. Gravity without airs, to show intuitive sympathy for friends, tolerance to amateurs and sloppy thinkers. His ability to get along with everyone, sharing his company was the highest of compliments, and the opportunity and honor for those around him to investigate and analyze with understanding and logic the principles we ought to live by, not to display anger or other emotions, to be free of passion and yet full of love, to praise without bombast, to display expertise without pretension. 10. The literary critic Alexander, not to be constantly correcting people, and in particular, not to jump on them whenever they make an error of usage or a grammatical mistake or mispronounce something, but just answer their question or add another example or debate the issue itself or make some other contribution to the discussion and insert the right expression unobtrusively. 11. Fronto, to recognize the malice, cunning, and hypocrisy that power produces, and the peculiar ruthlessness often shown by people from, quote, good families, unquote. 12. Alexander the Platonist, not to be constantly telling people that I am too busy, unless I really am. Similarly, not to be always ducking my responsibilities to the people around me because of pressing business. 13. Catullus, not to shrug off a friend's resentment, even unjustified, but try to put things right, to show your teachers ungrudging respect and your children unfeigned love. 14. My brother Severus, to love my family, truth, and justice. It was through him that I encountered Helvidius, Cato, Dion, and Brutus, and conceived of a society of equal laws, governed by equality of status and speech, and of rulers who respect the liberty of their subjects above all else, and from him as well, to be steady and consistent in valuing philosophy, to help others, and to be eager to share, not to be a pessimist, never to doubt your friend's affection for you, and that when people incurred his disapproval, they always knew it, and that his friends never had to speculate about this attitude to anything. It was always clear. 15. Maximus, self-control and resistance to distractions. Optimism in adversity, especially illness. A personality in balance, dignity and grace together. Doing a job without whining. Other people's certainty that what he said was what he thought and what he did was done without malice. Never taken aback or apprehensive. Neither rash nor hesitant or bewildered or at a loss. Nor obsequious but nor aggressive or paranoid either. Generosity, chastity, charity, honesty. The sense he gave of staying on the path rather than being kept on it. That one could ever have felt patronized by him or in a position to patronize him. A sense of humor. 16. My adopted father. Compassion, unwavering adherence to decisions. Once he reached them, indifference to superficial honors, hard work, persistence, listening to anyone who would contribute to the public good, his determination to treat people as they deserved, a sense of when to push and when to back off, putting a stop to the pursuit of boys, altruism, not expecting his friends to keep him entertained at dinner, to travel with him, unless, of course, they wanted to, and anyone who had to stay behind to take care of something always found him the same. His searching questions at meetings, a kind of single-mindedness, almost, never content with first impressions or breaking off the discussion prematurely. Self-reliance, always, and cheerfulness. His advanced planning, his advanced discreet attention to even minor things, restrictions and acclamations, attempts to flatter him, constant devotion to the empire's needs, stewardship of treasury, willingness to take responsibility and blame for both. His attitude to the gods, no superstitiousness, and his attitude to men, no demagoguery, no currying favor, no pandering, always sober, always steady, and never vulgar or a prey to fads. The way he handled the material comforts that fortune had supplied him in such abundance, without arrogance and without apology. If they were here, he took advantage of them. If not, he did not miss them. No one ever called him glib or shameless or pedantic. They saw him for what he was, a man tested by life, accomplished, unswayed by flattery, qualified to govern both himself and them. His respect for people who practiced philosophy, at least those were sincere about it, but without denigrating the others, but without or even listening to them. His ability to feel at ease with people and put them at their ease without being pushy. His willingness to take adequate care of himself, to yield the floor to experts in oratory, law, psychology, whatever, and to support them energetically so that each of them could fulfill his potential. Not prone to go off tangents or pulled in all directions, but sticking with the same old places and the same old things. The way he could have done one of his migraines and then go right back to what he was doing, fresh and the top of his game. He never exhibited rudeness, lost control of himself, or turned violent. No one ever saw him sweat. Everything was to be approached logically and with due consideration, in a calm and orderly fashion, but with no loose ends. 17. The gods. I had good grandparents, a good mother, and a good father, a good sister, good teachers, good servants, relatives, friends, almost without exception. And I never lost control of myself with any of them. Although I had it in me to do that, I might have easily, but thanks to the gods, I was never put in that position. And so I escaped the test. I wasn't raised by my grandfather's girlfriend for longer than I was. I did not lose my virginity too early and did not enter adulthood until it was time. Put it off, even. I had someone as a ruler and a father who could keep me from being arrogant and make me realize that even at court, you can live without a troop of bodyguards and gorgeous clothes, lamps, sculpture, the whole charade. You can behave almost like an ordinary person without seeming careless or as a ruler carrying out official obligations. I had the kind of brother I did, one whose character challenged me to improve my own, one whose love and affection enriched my life. Even though I was often upset with Rusticus, I never did anything I would have regretted later. I have the wife I do, obedient, loving, and humble. My children had competent teachers, all things for which we need the help of fortune and the gods. Book 2. On the River Grand, Among the Quarry. You're listening to Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, a pioneer of the philosophy of Stoicism. So far we've looked at Book 1. Now, Book 2 is On the River Grand, Among the Quarry. 1. When you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surely surly. They are like this because they can't tell good from evil. But I have seen the beauty of good and the ugliness of evil, and have recognized that the wrongdoer has a nature related to my own, not of the same blood or birth, but the same mind, and possessing a share of the divine. And so
None of them can hurt me. No one can implicate me in ugliness. Nor can I feel angry at my relative or hate him. We were born to work together like feet, hands and eyes, like the two rows of teeth, upper and lower. To obstruct each other is unnatural. To feel anger at someone, to turn your back on them, these are obstructions. 2. Whatever this is that I am, it is flesh and a little spirit and an intelligence. Throw away your books. Stop letting yourself be distracted. That is not allowed. Instead, as if you were dying right now, despise your flesh. A mess of blood, pieces of bone, a woven tangle of nerves, veins, arteries. Consider what the spirit is. Air, and never the same air, but vomited out and gulped again again every instant. Finally, the intelligence. Think of it this way. You are an old man. Stop allowing your mind to be a slave, to be jerked about by selfish impulses, to kick against fate and the present, and most importantly, to mistrust the future. 3. What is divine is full of providence. Even chance is not divorced from nature, from the inweaving and enfolding of things governed by providence. Everything proceeds from it. And then there is necessity and the needs of the whole world, of which you are a part. Whatever the nature of the whole does, and whatever serves to maintain it, is good for every part of nature. The world is maintained by change in the elements and in the things they compose. That should be enough for you. Treat it as an axiom. Discard your thirst for books so that you won't die in bitterness, but in cheerfulness and truth. Grateful to the gods from the bottom of your heart. 4. Remember how long you've been putting this off, how many extensions the gods gave you, and you did not use them. At some point you have to recognize what world it is that you belong in. What power rules it, and from what source you spring. There's a limit to the time assigned, and if you don't use it to free yourself, it will be gone, and it will never return. 5. Concentrate every minute like a Roman, like a man, on doing what's in front of you, with precise and genuine seriousness, tenderly, willingly, with justice, and on freeing yourself from all other distractions. Yes, you can. If you do everything as if it were the last thing you were doing in your life and stop being aimless, stop letting your emotions override what your mind tells you. Stop being hypocritical, self-centered, irritable. You see how few things you have to do to live a satisfying life? If you can manage this, that's all the gods can ask of you. 6. Yes, keep on degrading yourself, soul, but soon your chance at dignity will be gone. Everyone gets one life. Yours is almost used up, and instead of treating yourself with respect, you have entrusted your own happiness to the souls of others. 7. Do external things distract you? Then make time for yourself to learn something worthwhile. Stop letting yourself be pulled in all directions, but make sure you guard against the other kind of confusion. People who labor all their lives but have no purpose to direct every thought and impulse are wasting their time, even when hard at work. 8. Ignoring what goes on in other people's souls. No one ever came to grief that way. But if you won't keep track of what your own soul's doing, how can you not be unhappy? 9. Don't ever forget these things. The nature of the world. My nature. How I relate to the world. what proportion of it I make up, that you are a part of nature, and no one can prevent you from speaking and acting in harmony with it, always. 10. In comparing sins, Theophrastus says, the ones committed out of desire are worse than the ones committed out of anger, which is good philosophy. The angry man seems to turn his back on reason out of a kind of pain and inner convulsion. But the man motivated by desire, who is mastered by pleasure, seems somehow more self-indulgent, less manly in his sins. Theophrastus is right and philosophically sound. To save up a sin committed out of pleasure deserves a harsher rebuke than the one committed out of pain. The angry man is more like a victim of wrongdoing, provoked by pain to anger. The other man rushes into wrongdoing on his own, moved to action by desire. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please stay tuned for more better philosophy. Thank you.